The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism.
When Dongshan was ready to leave his teacher, Yunyan, Dongshan asked, "Later on, if someone asks me if I can depict your reality, your teaching, how shall I reply?" Yunyan paused and then said, "Just this is it." When he heard that, Dongshan sank into thought, and Yunyan said, "You are in charge of this great matter. You must be most thoroughgoing." Dongshan left Yunyan and was still perplexed. He didn't quite get it. As he proceeded, he was wading across a stream and seeing his reflection in the water, he had some understanding. He looked down in the stream and saw something, and then he wrote this poem. "Just don't seek from others, or you'll be far estranged from yourself. Now I go on alone, but everywhere I meet it. It is now me. I now am not it." One must understand in this way to merge with suchness. Let's recap. Dongshan, whose name is not yet Dongshan, but is Yu, leaves his home when he's just 10 years old and has his head shaved as a novice monk in a monastery. And he applies himself, and at age 21, he takes full priestly orders. He becomes ordained and moves for a time from teacher to teacher. Something I've been growing to really love and admire about Dongshan in these stories is that he's like that battle-scarred tiger he talks about in his poem. He doesn't give up, and he keeps going on, and he's not content with whatever degree of realization he has. He wants more. He knows that it's not everything. As the story says, he's still perplexed. Now, this story takes place after he's already had several experiences that come up in the records of Dongshan that we might call Kensho experiences or enlightenment experiences with different teachers, including with the great teacher Guishan. And yet, he's not finished. And I was wondering how old he was at the time of the story that we're considering for our retreat. And it turns out that based on when Yunyan died, Dongshan must have been in his early 30s, no older than that at the time. And yet, he kept on studying after this. It sounds like a grand conclusion. It's not. He keeps going like that battle-scarred tiger. And only when he's in his early 50s does he feel ready to start his own monastery. At this, his priest name all this time is Liangjie, which is what he's called by Yunyan. And so he goes to Dong Mountain, Mount Dong. Shan is mountain in Chinese. This is why we have so many Shans in our stories. Daishan and Yaoshan and Dongshan. The monasteries were often built on mountains to get them away from the cities and urban areas and officials and politics. And then the great teachers were named after their mountain monasteries. So only in his early 50s does Dongshan decide to set himself up as a teacher with his own monastery, Dongshan. This is a model for us, I think, that not to be content with some measure of understanding, but to understand that the Dharma, as we just chanted together, is incomparably profound and infinitely subtle. We never finish plumbing it. We don't hit bottom, ever. Melissa gave us several wonderful stories about Dongshan, in addition to the one that we're concentrating on. And there's one more that she kindly left to me that I especially like, and so I'm going to read it to you now. This is when, this is the last anecdote, at least in this book I'm using, before the story that we have. So he's nearing the end of his time with Yunyan. And Dongshan asked Yunyan, "When I want to see it face to face, what should I do?" Yunyan said, "Ask someone who's done it." Dongshan said, "That's what I'm doing." Yunyan said, "What can I say to you?" So Yunyan's not playing with him. What can I say to you? This is the dilemma of every Dharma teacher. This is the spoken or unspoken question behind every Dharma talk you'll ever hear. What can I say to you? How do I talk to you about something that can't be expressed in words? One of our root stories about the transmission, the first in a long series of transmissions leading to this room and other rooms all over the world, Buddha to Mahakashyapa. The Buddha says it's a special transmission, outside tradition, not conveyed by words and phrases. So what can I say? What can any teacher say? And so what Yunyan is imparting as one of his final gifts is the message that Dongshan has to find this on his own. And this resonates through our story, the one we've decided to concentrate on, when he says, you are in charge of this great matter. You must be most thoroughgoing. No teacher can give the student what the student most wants. And what's touching about this is the teacher so much wishes that they could give it. Wouldn't that be nice? A lot of us, right, struggling with koans. Can't you just give me this one? I know you know the answer. Can't I just, maybe this time, can't you just give it to me? And no teacher will do this, because it doesn't work that way. It does not reside in words. But as Dongshan says in the song of the Jewel Mirror Samadhi, it can't be captured in words, but a pivotal moment brings it forth. And so the story that we're considering is the story of a pivotal moment. And what the teacher can do, what Yunyan does for Dongshan, given that he cannot say what Yunyan wants to hear, what can I say? What Yunyan can do is push Dongshan in a direction that may lead to such a pivotal moment. Not the first pivotal moment ever, by the way, in Dongshan's career, and not the last. Dongshan also says in the Jewel Mirror Samadhi poem, "There is sudden and gradual." And what I like about Dongshan is that we get a gradual series of sudden experiences. There is sudden and gradual. We get this. We develop this fantasy, or we start out with it, really, almost as soon as we hear about Zen, that there's some big, earth-shaking, you know, flash of light experience, and it's one and done. Like, okay, done that, check that off the life list. But it just doesn't work that way. And I'm not saying that some Zen teachers haven't had a big knockdown world turned upside down and self exploded into the universe moment, and maybe not had another one. That's all anyone needs. But I don't think it usually works that way. I think Dongshan's experience is more like the kinds of experiences we in this room can expect to have. And as David said the other day, these pivotal moments might just be a second. We might not even know what's happening when it's happening. And then talking later with the teacher. And this is another thing a teacher can do, is talk to you about moments that have been unusual and that seem to have represented real openings to you. What was it? Another in a series of pivotal moments. So let's go back to it. He was wading across a stream and seeing his reflection in the water, he had some understanding. Pierce and I both talked a bit about water, and maybe I'll come back to it. But for now, I want to keep going. He looked down in the stream and saw something, and then he wrote this poem. Just don't seek from others, or you'll be far estranged from yourself. Now I go on alone. But everywhere I meet it, it is now me. I now am not it. One must understand in this way to merge with suchness. Pierce gave us a start on this poem, and I'll see if I can take it a little further. So, of course, just don't seek from others, or you'll be far estranged from yourself. Beautiful, isn't it? Because this is a version of what Yunyan has been telling Dongshan. Dongshan has now internalized and fully accepted this really important teaching that the teacher can't tell you. The teacher can't do it for you. Asking Yunyan, what is it? And Yunyan saying, what can I say? What can I say? And I'm really struck by this, or you'll be far estranged from yourself, because at first this sounds like it's non-doctrinal, right? Melissa beautifully told us the other day that while Shakyamuni Buddha inherited from his culture the notion of Atman, of this great world soul, this super soul, as Melissa put it. Shakyamuni's revelation, part of his revelation, was that no, it's actually Anatman. It's no self, not super self. And so what's this self that Dongshan is talking about? Don't seek from others or you'll be far estranged from yourself. And here's how I'm understanding this. I'll try this out. So, as long as Dongshan is looking outside of himself and thinks that someone else has what he lacks, he's going to experience a kind of self-estrangement. And this is so tempting for us human beings, cowering like rats. I love that line. You know, Dongshan really has a lot of compassion for us. Cowering like rats, we are so inclined to think that someone else is it and we can't be. And that we could never be like Dongshan or Yunyan unless somehow we become somebody different. You know, occasionally you read a really, really mean review of a performance that will say, in order to improve this performance, the actor or musician would have to be born again and become a completely different person. And this is how we feel sometimes. How can we, with this frail, imperfect body and mind, how can we gain some real freedom? How can we really wake up? like these great teachers that we read about. And if we idolize them and think that they are what we're not, we become estranged from ourselves. And so there are teachers who literally wrap their students on the head and say, everything you have, everything you need, you have. There's nothing you lack. What is it you think that you're missing? And that's one way of doing it. Another way is Yun Yan's way, which is to say, what can I tell you? What can I say? So when Dongshan gets over that estrangement, that's when he can release his sense of self. The estrangement, the wanting to be someone else, the wanting to be different than he is what's the glue that's actually holding the delusory self together. And when he can let that go, as he understands, he looks at his image in water and has some understanding. He doesn't look at it and see Yun Yan. He looks at it and sees it. Now I go on alone. So no more, I'm not carrying Yun Yan on my back anymore. I'm not carrying all the teachers and hermits that I've sat at their feet during my wanderings anymore. Finally, I'm alone. But everywhere I meet it. So wonderful how the Soto tradition in particular, and the Zen tradition as a whole, but Dongshan, as we know already, is one of the founders of the Caodong school, or at least it was named partly after him. The Dong in Caodong is from Dongshan, so Soto in Japanese. And it's wonderful the way that the Soto tradition speaks back and forth across the centuries. And so this, now I go on, but everywhere I meet it, for me resonates so much with Dogen, who brought Caodong Zen to Japan, who established Soto Zen in Japan. And Dogen says, to study the Buddha way is to study the self, not to study somebody else. But to study the self is to forget the self. So when the self-estrangement is over, then the self can be forgotten. Now I go alone, but everywhere I meet it. Now Dongshan can meet it, the it that he asked Dongshan about. How can I realize it? How can I know it? It is now me, total intimacy. No gap, no distance, perfect vision. Another great Caodong teacher, another great Soto teacher says, has no gap. I know I'm not it, but this isn't some gigantic ego. He's not on the ultimate ego trip. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be actualized or realized by the 10,000 things, Dogen says, by the myriad dharmas, by mountain groves, meadows, woods, birds, trees, stars, ants, sticks, ceiling tiles, the skunk in the garden. No difference. This is now this is now me. I now am not it. It can only be said both ways. Either phrase alone would mislead us. Together, it is now me, I now am not it, gives us a clue, helps set us on our way. So, wading across a stream. How lovely for me, who loves water, that he has this moment when he's looking down at moving water. And there's a story that I'm pretty certain by now you've all heard, and I don't think it's the first time it's been told here at the temple, but I'll tell it again because I like it so much. That also concerns water. And the story is not by an ancient Chinese or medieval Japanese teacher, but it's by a 20th century novelist, David Foster Wallace. And he tells it a couple of times in a couple of different ways, including in his great novel, Infinite Jest, which came out right at the end of the last century. And in this story, two young fish are blithely swimming in the ocean. And an old fish comes swimming towards them. And as the old fish passes, the old fish says, "How's the water?" And after he passes, one of the young fish looks at the other and says, "What's water?" What is it? What is this? What's water? And so here's my continuation of the story. So the story goes on in my mind. And one of the young fish just keeps going on his way and, you know, enters his own personal ocean of suffering. But the other fish can't forget this question. What is water? Can't forget what the old fish said, seemingly in the most casual, friendly way. How's the water? The young fish can't let this go. The young fish is hooked. The young fish has taken the bait. And so they stay with this question. What is water? What is water? And sometimes the question just becomes what the Korean Zen tradition calls a wado. What is this? Or what Dongshan says, it. How can I find it? How can I know it? What is this? And why this fish and not the other one? Partly just chance. Two monks open the blinds the exact same way. One gains, one loses. But partly in my story, partly because this young fish had an experience when it was quite young, when it was just a small fry. And as a small fry, this little fish had one day just had this sense that it was immersed in and part of something so vast it could never measure it. The fish could never measure it. And the fish was both moving through it and was it. And this vastness was teeming with life and was constantly moving. It was just a moment in a small fry's life. And so when our old fish, who now in my story becomes a bodhisattva, the bodhisattva of water, when the old fish says, how's the water, he triggers something in the young fish that the young fish won't let go. Just as Dongshan won't let go of his search. But like our original teacher, Shakyamuni, keeps moving deeper and deeper, further and further, into the reaches of the inexhaustible Dharma. When Dongshan was ready to leave his teacher, Yunyan, Dongshan asked, later on, if someone asks me, if I can depict your reality, your teaching, how shall I reply? Yunyan paused and then said, "Just this is it." When he heard that, Dongshan sank into thought, and Yunyan said, "You are in charge of this great matter. You must be most thoroughgoing." Dongshan left Yunyan and was still perplexed. He didn't quite get it. As he proceeded, he was wading across a stream and seeing his reflection in the water, he had some understanding. He looked down in the stream and saw something, and then he wrote this poem. "Just don't seek from others, or you'll be far estranged from yourself. Now I go on alone, but everywhere I meet it, it is now me. I now am not it. One must understand in this way to merge with suchness." So, what is it? How's the water? Thank you. So please sit comfortably as we move into Dharma dialogue. And move a bit forward if you'd like, Don, if you'd like to move forward. And come forward with your questions and comments and anecdotes, and David and Melissa and I will do our best to respond. Yeah, well.
Thank you very much for the Dharma talk. Set off all kinds of things in me. Let me stick with the first thing, which was, let's see if I can say this. I guess in the first part of the story of Dongshan, I had been thinking earlier that when Dongshan asks his teacher, "What shall I say your teaching was?" there's something very sort of third person about it, and I think that's what we brought out. It's like he wants to be able to say, "Oh, what my teacher said," and that is the sort of pointing to somebody else, right? So in that sense, I think he hears, it seemed to me that he hears it as a quotation. "Oh, just this is it. Okay, well, that was my teacher's teaching, was just this is it." But it wasn't a quotation. I think Nanchang meant, "This is it. This, right here. This, you and me, this that's happening. This asking the question." He's not giving him a phrase, right? And so then I was going to arrogantly, not challenge you, but sort of, in a sense, I felt what you said about this is the question, the second question, what can I say, what shall I say, is the question of every Dharma teacher. And you were a Dharma teacher, you just gave us a Dharma talk. So there too, I would say, I don't hear that as a rhetorical question, meaning it's different from saying, "I cannot say." It's saying, "What shall I say?" And that's it. That's what Dongshan needs to ask. It's the big what, right? He needs that big question mark there. He needs his own question mark. Sort of as I think, you know, you were doing with the big question. What is this? What shall I say? So again, it's not a door slamming in the face, which it would be if he said. And I'm saying this to myself because I sometimes think, "Oh, it's inexpressible." Go figure out the inexpressible. You'll find it there. You know, the inexpressible isn't a thing, right? You don't find it. It is what? What?
The you don't find the inexpressible, but what you find cannot be expressed.
Which is different.
Yeah. And that's part of what Dongshan is figuring out. And you know, this again is what I'm coming to love about Dongshan. A lot of stories, you know, there's a moment of transmission between teacher and student. Yunyan is transmitting the Dharma, has transmitted the Dharma to Dongshan. There's a moment of transmission, and it's like, okay, great, no problem. Now, you know, we handed the football, and now I've got it. And Dongshan is not that way. And so when he says, you know, when I'm asked about your teaching, you know, in some versions it's, you know, when I'm asked for your portrait. You know, what he's saying is, I'm not sure I really have it. You know, thanks for the Inka Shome. You know, thanks for the golden Raksu. But I'm not sure. I'm still not sure I've got it. So it really, it's also a question. He's questioning himself. Do I really have it? Have I really got it? Because Dongshan clearly, you know, is not one of those slightly narcissistic teachers in our tradition. Who's so pleased? You know, he never stops. He's the battle scarred tiger. He's the bodhisattva that sits for 10 kalpas. Did you want to add?
Oh, I do. How did you know?
I felt it.
Yeah. Oh, see, there's transmission right there. I just want to. Everything you said, I agree with. So, but I did want to go back to the narrative itself. So the first thing that Yunyan says to him is, what can I say? Then, later, Dongshan persists, and he says, just this is it. And
I think... it's the reverse.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought, oh, yeah, I see.
And it's just because we've been picking and choosing different elements, but to know the narrative is a nice thing sometimes. And to see this very thing that's arising that Alan is just putting out, what might have been happening in Dongshan's heart, right? And that these aren't rhetorical questions. Every time Yunyan says something, he's just saying the Dharma in different ways that will push his student into what eventually happens when he crosses the stream. So sincere in his inquiry. But I think I want to affirm that your view of these things as perfect expressions of the Dharma in the moment is also true, right? What can I say? And I think, really, Alan was pointing to that in the talk. Right. Is it complete? And also, just this is it. Is it complete? Right. I'm not saying, here's how you can quote me. So I think, you know, there's something lovely when we really do what all of us do and what you just demonstrated. Go dive deep into this and hear, feel the exchange as if it was you talking to yourself. That's when we get some insight into these stories, which are sometimes just impossible to understand, we think. And, of course, the reality is, what can I say? Alan just gave a great Dharma talk. Mm-hmm. And we say things in Dokusan. Sometimes we just sit there. But more often, we have a little conversation. And that's what's happening here, of course. They're having a little conversation. But it's never the thing itself, except when it is the thing itself. There are a lot of koans that turn on that point, that the words themselves are the answer to the koan. Because words are it, too. There's nothing that's excluded from the Dharma. Yeah. Thank you.
Michael.
I just want to kind of pull off of what he was saying, but what really struck me is what can I say, how incredibly compassionate teaching that is. Because obviously this Yunyan has given many talks and said so much over the years as a teacher. And yet it's, you know, these moments, he says, what can I say? It just opens up this, you know, he's handing him the Dharma, you know, it's... And in a way that he's dropping himself away, Yunyan is dropping away and saying, what can I say?
Yeah.
You know, I just felt that, you know, so visceral. And only a teacher really can say that in a way that can really, really do it.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. One of my favorite lines in all our sutra book is, you know, thousands of words, myriad interpretations are only to free you from obstructions. So Yunyan's done the thousands of words, and now it's time for Yunyan to just give the little push that will help Dongshan free himself of obstructions, because Yunyang can't do it for him. Done.
Thank you. Yeah, really feeling the compassion of that talk, of the exchange between the teacher and the student, and like what came to me, like what I thought of or how I felt was kind of different than I had thought about the teacher's words before. Where a teacher, like for me in my mind, he was really just saying like, you know, Dongshan, you're awesome, like you are so cool, and like you got it, like you, I just like, come here, give me a hug, like you're a fan. You know, like, you just go forth and like, be, you do you, man. And that's like kind of how, like, how it came to me. So, like, I was just like, it was such a joyful thing, and Dongshan's sitting there like, and then, yeah, so I don't know, that's what I got.
Yes.
Yeah,
like,
it was just,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I really appreciate the translation. And I think that's the point here. These stories point to something that we know and something that arises. You know, we are both the one who doesn't know and the one who does know. And I love your dreaming into Dongshan. I think for each one of us, it's like almost impossible to believe. No, I couldn't be me. I'm just working hard here. I'm just trying to get by. And the teacher is joyfully saying, you, and you're like, where, who, right? No, you, right? And this joyous pointing. Just the joyous pointing.
I think that phrase "dreaming into" is a great way to describe what koan practice is. Even if you're not doing koan practice, you are, because you're hearing koan. You're hearing talks to dream into the story and then make it yours, like you both did. Really, it's just delightful. And I keep thinking, there's one of the koans somewhere is about a Zen teacher whose Chinese name is Hu Mi. I think we should all take that on as our Dharma name. Hu Mi, Hu Mi. Also, one other little thing that I think is delightful about Dongshan, you know, just you can hear it, we've been just so happy to look into him more deeply than we normally do. Many of his sayings and doings that were translated into koans begin with him asking a question of the group, you know, and then nobody answers, and then he answers himself. And it's like, if you look at the record of Dongshan, it's just, that happens over and over. That happens with Yunmen, a bunch of classic teachings. It's a way of teaching. But the most famous one that you all probably have heard is, he says, where is the place where there's no heat or cold? Right? He asks everybody that. Nobody has an answer, and then he gives you an answer. So there's some wonderful way that his teaching was about keeping that, oh, I just got little shivers, keeping that, what can I say, alive as a thread through all his teaching, even all the way to the delusion banquet and beyond. Let's see if somebody else does, then we can come back.
I really appreciated what you had to say. I think that really helped me find my way into the story. And so also seeing from the teacher's point of view, and in a way, the kind of powerlessness. So, you know, Dongshan, you know, I can imagine a teacher, you know, really wanting to make the connection, right? But only Dongshan can do that for himself. And really just, you know, having just to wait.
Mm. Yeah. And there are many kinds of waiting. And one kind of waiting is a kind of impatient, oh, you idiot, why don't you, you know.
Come on.
Yeah, yeah.
Justice is heck.
But there is a kind of waiting. Kshanti, patience, is one of the paramitas. And I think all of us have to wait for ourselves. Right? All of us can be impatient. Why not now? Why isn't it? But this kind of open-hearted waiting. We could call it faith, but that makes it too big a thing. But to wait without agitation, right? To wait knowing that the Dharma is unfolding the Dharma, and it's not up to me or you or anyone, but we can participate with this. So I love that image of this delighted waiting. Everyone is right where they should be. Everyone is already awake. No need to be any different. Everyone manifesting the whole earth.
And there's also, in the larger context, you know, there's the compassion of Guishan, who says at one point, you know, go try Yunyan. Yeah, you know, I've done what I can. And he's not dismissing him, but he's just saying, you know, there's another teacher, if you can handle him, you know, there's another teacher who may be able to point you in the direction that you want to go. And so sometimes a teacher needs to be ready, you know, not just to be patient, well, you know, stay here for ages, for kalpas, but to say, you know, time for you to try this other teacher who I respect. And I think that you know, that's something that we can keep in mind here, where we have various teachers. And it's what I love about Guishan is he doesn't get all egotistical about it and say, well, I'm your teacher, you know, you're going to work it out with me. But he's generous and says, go try Yunyan. You know, you might be on the same wavelength as him. And it turns out that he is. Yeah, so even patience isn't always enough.
Well, and also, yet another view, there are many stories of people being very impatient in the koan literature for sure, and up in the Dokusan room too. And there's nothing wrong with being impatient if that's what's arising. And the story I'm thinking of is the alive or dead koan, which some of you know, where somebody, you know, goes to a funeral and knocks on the car, says alive or dead, and the teacher says, I won't say. And then they're walking home and it's, say, I want you to say it. If you don't say it, I'll hit you. And the teacher says, well, you can go ahead and hit me, but I won't say. And then he ends up going to another teacher similarly, but this is after his first teacher dies. And the second teacher says, I won't say. And boom, that's the thing. So through the impatience can arise the insight too. In other words, there are no fake Dharma gates. Everything that's authentic to you is what's going to take you to the place that you can't even imagine. And you'll imagine it. Also, all the imagining. I think I know what samadhi is, or, you know, awakening, or kensha, all that stuff. It's completely unimaginable until it happens. Even if it's a really, really big one, like Alan was talking about. I mean, I have to say, speaking personally, if you've had a really, really big one, you still have to keep going. Right, it's not like, fantastic, I got it all. Although there is a delusion that's carried forward in Zen that could be final. But if you have a good teacher, it's not final. You're pushed to, you know, it's called Zen sickness sometimes. You're pushed out of your arrogance. And if the teacher doesn't do it, by the way, I can also speak from personal experience, life will do it. You're just always being, ugh. You know, it's so impossible to be a human being. So this is something that lasts. And Dongshan demonstrates it so beautifully in all the stories about him, which were probably made up by other people. We don't even know if they happened, right? But whoever wrote them, whoever presented them and preserved them, shows a character who as really Alan was pointing out, is relentless, right up until the end. You know, he gives that final week. So amazing to me. Wait, I'm not going to die right now, because you people still need to hear more of what I can say. So it, you can feel the currents, right? What can I say? What can I say? What can I say? I think Ray has his hand up too. Do you want to have Will again?
So let's wait till people that haven't asked yet ask. Ray, you had a question.
Entering into these different peoples and their experience, Dongshan and Yunyan, go to this place and sort of imagine myself having their experience. But it's not my experience, right? And I can get caught in their experience, right? And think this is it. Mm. But my experience is not their experience. And that transition from their experience to my experience is, because I can't manufacture their experience as my experience. I wish I could.
Well, but yes and no. there are, Dongshan is nowhere else except in your heart. And you are not who you think you are. Right, and I appreciate what you're saying. There is this otherness, and it's kind of arrogant to think, well, I know what he's thinking or she's thinking. But yet, this whole Zen tradition, the only way we know it, the only way any of this makes any sense, is these parts of ourself. Dongshan is not some other person.
I'd also like to say, Ray, and I don't even know if this is touching what you asked, but what came up for me is that a lot of the stories we have because they make really good stories. And so the fact that we can't always enter into them is not an accident. These are stories that are sort of at the grand scale. And when Dongshan says they're sudden and gradual, you know, I think of one of my favorite ancestors who's not in the lineage, because although he was a transmitted teacher, he never had students. But he was a great poet, Ryokan, again in the Soto school. And Ryokan never had a Kensho, a Satori moment. And yet, he was a fully realized Buddha, and you see it all through his poetry. So, but that doesn't make a very good story, right? You can't, you know, he didn't cross a stream and see his... He just kept practicing and sitting in his mountain hut and writing more poetry and reading Hanshan. And so, you know, there's lots of ways to do it. And we don't have to identify with any one of them. And as David says, we're all of the ancestors, named and unnamed.
And I would also add that Ryokan may not have had a big Maha Kensho, but he had openings all his life. So this is, they're sudden and gradual, right? So for every person is unique. And sometimes it's just a whole bunch of gradual things that are so small that we may not even notice them. The only ones we notice are the ones that are kind of, you know. And something that I've noticed in teaching is that when people are younger, there's more of an opportunity for this blast, because we're kind of, you know, we don't know what's going on. I mean, I'm just trying to remember what it was like, and I didn't know what was going on. So when reality manifests itself, you know, it seemed like a big deal. But it keeps, so it's a little slower, this is sort of the generalization, as we get older. It's a little bit slower, but they're still happening, little pops. And Hakuin, in the Rinzai school, but one of our kind of soul ancestors, I would say, because he gave us the koan curriculum in the 18th century, 17th century. He used to talk about little moments that make you dance. And he had a whole bunch of what you might call Maha Kenshos, but he also had an infinite number, I would say, of these little moments that make you dance. And everyone in this room and everyone who might be listening to this recording has had them. But they're so small, you sometimes discount them or don't think they're... And this is why we have these other skillful means of meeting with a teacher. Not to make you think, oh, you know, when I bit into the broccoli, my head exploded. Not like that. But just that we can start to see these openings having an effect on how you are as human beings. And we're still doing the same work, I hope. I know I am. It just, this endless practice, sudden and gradual, you know, endlessly opening and then getting hit in the face again. And then sometimes there's this big thing, and it's really the delusion, I think, in modern Zen accounts of the past is that was the end. As Alan says, like, great, makes a great story. But it's never the end. None of those characters where it says, and then he came to enlightenment. And then you can find in the lamp records, then what happened? Yeah. Then what happened? Then what happened? It's just never the end. So to keep seeking it is delusion, but just in the spirit of everything we do leads to it. The seeking also is part of the journey, right? But eventually you realize, I can trust what Dogen says, that after I study myself and then the self drops away maybe, then the world offers itself to us. That actually we don't need to do all the work. Everything is setting us up, like that bird singing, that crow singing right now. If you really hear it, that's one of those little moments that makes you dance, and then you have to go on and do walking meditation. You know, it's like, I love that about Zen, that it's not just basking in some transcendent moment. Mm-hmm. You have to get up and do the dishes, cook the rice, sweep the floor. It's such a beautiful design. Never, you can't cling. Oh, you can, but ultimately, it doesn't end there. Mm-hmm. Also, it hurts to cling. Mm-hmm.
Adam.
I'm really inspired, I guess, by this persistence in Dongshan, partly because one of my 10,000 selves used to have run ultra marathons, so running through the woods and crossing streams and things like that and just keep going is very familiar. In fact, one of the mantras is relentless forward motion. But another one of my selves is usually fixated on solving problems and figuring things out. And I just really am inspired by this idea of all of these teachers and ancestors having these moments where they think they figured something out momentarily. And then they keep persisting and they keep coming back to the practice even though they may have these moments over and over again. And there's something just really inspiring to me about that consistency and the showing up over and over again. And it's just right now a feeling of gratitude that I get to be here right now and have this talk with three old fish.
So. Yeah, I love the phrase they use, he had some understanding.
Yeah. Well, and then there's a freedom in our practice. So before, during, and after, it's all the same. And things come and things go. But this is the essential thing, that there is not some other golden ring, or there is a golden ring, but that'll be the thing. What's required of us doesn't change. And we can meet that and open our hearts and give that, and give ourselves away again and again.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Will.
Thank you. Sorry, it's just...
No, you're being like Dongshan.
You're being like the guy in the Alive or Dead column.
I just sort of understood something that I've never understood before. And it's the spirit of a woman where he tells you a koan and then he writes a verse saying it's bullshit. It's totally bullshit. They're poisoning you, they're fooling you. Because... the way I always hear the koans is, you know, poor Dongshan before, right? He doesn't get it, he doesn't get it, he doesn't get it, he doesn't get it. And then Dongshan after, whoa, got it. So now
we're all like the people who don't get it, and he's the one who got it. Mm. But it is a lie, right? I mean, it Dongshan had it. Nothing changed. Mm. Nothing changed.
Nothing changed.
Yes.
So it is bullshit in a certain way, right? I mean, I have such reverence for you guys and for the Dharma and for teaching in general that I never, you know, it's like, okay, I'm going to study this till the end of time and, you know, I'll be a good... But it's bullshit in a certain way, right?
Yeah totally.
The whole tradition.
Yeah, yeah.
And can we strike this from the recording?
and that is what we're trying to poison.
Yeah. Yes. You know?
That's what the Dharma teacher as thief is trying to steal.
Yeah, I really appreciate that for the first time.
Right, there's a lot of references to us.
Well, I know,
thieves.
I mean, I realize the tradition says this over and over,
but I just, you know.
Something, you had a little moment that made you dance. And we all witnessed it.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And?
I want to sort of address Will's statement. And it's the beginner question, but if you have something and don't know it, it is different than if you have something and know it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the have something's the same, but the sense of, don't know, self, accomplishment, knowing whatever is vastly different between the two.
Yep.
So I disagree.
Well, it's the same thing. It's two sides to say there's nothing to do. There's something so important that all of us are giving ourselves to that are trying to make real. And so, yes, it is different when you realize, I'm not separate. And when you realize you're not separate, nothing has changed.
And a lot of the texts point to this. Dogen says it a lot. So everyone is already a Buddha, but you may not know you're a Buddha. And this is, I think, Zen is about awakening. We use that word awakening, but it's awakening to everything you need is here. And I remember as a teacher, I made that statement early on. I think it was in like the very beginning of my teaching career. And somebody got really angry. That's not true. And so I stopped saying it for a long time because I was looking outward. But it's really, really true. But we're not conscious of it. We don't know we're Buddhas.
My very first Boundless Way Zen retreat and was a week-long retreat like this one, but not like this one because there was no hybrid, no, you know, interruption. It was just a solid week. And this one here, Melissa, got me to start working on Mu after I, you know, kicking and screaming, saying, well, I don't do koans. I'm Soto Zen. I just want to do the silent illumination thing. And I, you know, hit my head against the wall and kept working with her. And when I left, she said, so keep working with Mu, and if you feel you get what Mu is, then talk to one of the teachers. Talk to any Zen teacher. But I thought that was so wonderful. Just grab the first Zen teacher. But for that very reason, what you brought up, Anne, you know, don't just think, you know, don't just keep it to yourself. Mm-hmm. But talk to a teacher and you know, get some feedback, get some validation or not. And so this is why we have teachers. Not because we can, you know, give you Mu, but so that when you find Mu, you can talk to us and we can give you some feedback. It's funny to think that long
ago.
Wow,
and I just have to say that, you know, I stopped forcing people to do koans because look at the results. It was a big mistake. I can't stop apologizing.
You just don't know where it's going to lead.
That's true. But in reality, you know, what we're doing as teachers is we're checking into you as you come into the room, not in a judgmental way, but in a, is this person know that they're a Buddha yet? Has this person figured it out yet? And if they have, there are all these skillful means, certain kinds of breath practices, shikantaza, done in a way that's very open without meddling, koan practice, to find the right fit that will get you out of this idiocy, not me, who me, said Master, who me, not me, yeah, you, couldn't be, then who?
Do we have a last question or response? Okay. Jenny?
Yeah, when I came back from my long pilgrimage, I was different, and people could see I was different, like even people that didn't know me. And they'd say, like, well, what happened? What'd you learn? And, like tell me right now in the grocery store aisle. And I kind of feel like, well, do you have 6 months? I can show you. And there's like this cultural belief that if you can't tell me right now in the grocery store aisle, it is bullshit.
Right.
But I kind of still believe it myself because I want to take this home and give it to people and inject it into their lives as they are without them having to change.
Yeah. There's no sound. There's no soundbite version.
Yeah.
And of course, if you could do what the person in aisle 7 wants, that would be the lie. That would be the bullshit. Yeah. But how wonderful! I love the wanderings. You know that Dongshan is a great wanderer, and you are a great wanderer. And you know some of us like Ryokan stay in the same mountain hut year after year. And some of us need to hit the trail. And so we all have our different styles of pursuing the Dharma. And yours and mine, you know, resonate in ways that mean a lot to me. All right, let's sit together a bit more.
Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed this talk, please consider donating at wisterzen.org/donate.